Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 469 for comics originally released on August 3rd, 2016. Now, starting us off in DC is Suicide Squad Rebirth number 1. This is one of those rebirth issues, which, as we were talking about before we started recording, Drew, I think we're both in agreement these are a little bit of a mixed bag.
Yeah, they seem to be no real template for them. Some are rehashes of previous plot points. Some are kind of origin stories. Some are just picking up like the very next issue and continuing. So there's really no consistency in what a rebirth issue is, which I think is kind of annoying to me. And then quality wise, I think they're also all over the place as far as their execution.
Well, I think the fact that they've got no set format is a pro and a con, because if they all had the same format, like some of the villain issues or some of the other event things they've done, fifth week event-ish sort of things, not that they're literally fifth week events, but we tend to complain that they're all doing the same story beats.
Yeah, with Convergence, we felt that very much, yes.
Yeah, so I think not doing that makes sense, is beneficial.
Yeah.
But to me, the bigger problem is the quality's all over the place.
I mean, here's what I wanted. You know, I came off of DC Universe Rebirth, so I thought each one of these rebirth issues would be a piece of that larger puzzle, kicking you into their story where they might trickle a little clue here and there on that storyline over time. And that must have been too complicated to pull off, because it didn't go in that direction. And that's really what I was hoping for.
But kind of like how the Stolen Time and the other things in there.
Yeah.
How did it impact this character? Yeah.
And some of them did that. Some of them touched on it. Flash did, of course. And but some just ignored that altogether and didn't really add anything to that. And that was an exciting read. That was an exciting issue and got me excited for DC Universe and the whole thing. So, you know, they did what they did, and it's a mixed bag.
Well, the other thing with these is the look between a rebirth number one and just a regular number one is too similar. I'll be honest, when I was kind of reading this last night and thinking it through, I was thinking in terms of just Suicide Squad number one, not Suicide Squad Rebirth number one. And I don't think it really changes my thoughts on this much. If anything, it might help it a little. I felt this had a lot of heavy exposition. It set up the premise of the Suicide Squad yet again. And, I mean, I get the need, but one, they could have done it a lot faster. And two, I'm kind of questioning if they really did need to do that, because, I mean, the Suicide Squad movie's in theaters now. So did they really need to reset up the premise? People are either going to be familiar with the concept from the comics or from the movie. So to reiterate it here, when it feels like we got it not that long ago in the new Suicide Squad, and that's, quote, the new Suicide Squad, unquote, the title, not as if it's a new Suicide Squad, which this is the new Suicide Squad, because that's not confusing. The fact that we've gotten these story beats before of explain the premise, intercut with the team kind of out in the field in action in some way, shape, or form. Been there, done that. This isn't bad. It's just, it felt a little rehashy.
Yeah.
With stuff that, frankly, I mean, when was the last time we touched on the new Suicide Squad title? I think it was just back in February. And it was the start of an arc, and it had the, what's the premise, here's a new guy coming in, that kind of a thing. So.
And Amanda Waller put on weight again, which is nice.
Did she? You know, I really didn't even pay any attention to that. You're right, she's.
She's not bone skinny like she was in the last iteration.
Yeah, wow, that's.
She's on that Oprah diet, I think.
I guess, that's confusing. Because I'm trying to think where else we've seen her, and which side of that diet she's on.
Yeah.
I've really got mixed feelings about Harley being a member of the Suicide Squad. She's way popular, so having her in the squad makes sense from a sales perspective. But from a shared universe perspective, she's in a bunch of other titles, and in none of them does she happen to be incarcerated and a member of the Suicide Squad. So there's that little dichotomy. Maybe we're going to find out there are multiple Harley Quinns. Who knows?
Oh, please. That's not.
Yeah. And then the other thing is, going back to, again, the heavy exposition, I felt there was a lot of tell, don't show about the characterization of the various squad members. And, Deadshot's doing a, blow the bomb in my head right now, kind of, he's tired of the situation he's in, just kill him. Which actually runs counter to this doesn't care if he lives or die personality trait they describe him as having. He seems more like having a death wish, the way he acts, versus how they tell us he's going to act. And, I really just chalk that up to not so great writing. It's not horrible, but it's not great. And I felt the art, on the one hand, had some good qualities. On the other hand, there was a kinetic chaos to it that wasn't really helping me. This just felt like kind of par for the course for the start of a new arc of Suicide Squad. And having Captain Flag is this Captain Flag or the grandson or great-grandson of it's
Colonel Flag,
whichever, whoever. Colonel Flag, Rick Flag, has been connected to this team on and off for quite some time. So bringing him back, okay, fine. It feels like they're telling similar story beats to again, what we've seen before. So this was, for me, just kind of there. It didn't really add anything new. It didn't really change up anything. And it didn't really make me think, wow, this is amazing, or wow, this is bad. I mean, they didn't do anything wrong. They just didn't do anything new.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. It felt like the new Suicide Squad, and there's no new here. So this is just the Suicide Squad, and it felt very similar. I did like the Flag character. I liked his introduction. Wasn't real familiar with him, so I thought he was a good leader for the team, and I thought they set him up well as that. It remains to be seen how he's going to gel with everybody, but because he was just kind of dropped in there towards the end. But I really, I mean, he was really the only character that I really enjoyed. Everybody else was really one note and not well executed, I didn't think.
And from your perspective, he's a new character, essentially. You're not familiar with him?
No, I wasn't.
Okay. That's I think, where we've got a difference in kind of the baggage we're bringing in. I've read so many Suicide Squad comics where he's the leader that how will he fit in? I mean, they may go in a different direction, obviously, but I know how he has fit in the past.
Right.
So I guess I think this is, again, like you said, there's no new on this. It's just the Suicide Squad, which is oddly appropriate given how I don't feel they're going in any sort of a new direction. And the sad thing is, I think there are many directions they could go in that would remain true to the concept, but really add some interesting dynamics. I'm kind of at the point where Waller getting chewed out of, you can't run this kind of a program sort of a thing. She can. She has. She's been chewed out by just about everybody on that count and is still around running this kind of a program. So complaining about it doesn't matter. She's going to do it. That is stopping. I mean, it works, but it's stopping being a dramatic plot point. Whereas if they had set up somebody who was kind of the administrative assistant who had somebody running the program and they get chewed out and they get bounced and somebody else comes in and they get chewed out and they get bounced, yet, do that rinse repeat every so often and you realize, wait, it's probably the assistant that's actually running the thing. I think Amanda Waller in that position as the hidden power or somebody else as opposed to Amanda Waller could have been very interesting.
Is this the first time that Obama has dressed her down?
I don't recall. It's happened so often from so many different people. The president has definitely done it before. And I think within Obama's administration, I just don't know that we saw it as clearly as this.
I would hope not. I would hope this is not a conversation that's already occurred with Obama and Waller in the New 52.
Not in the New 52. That much is certain. I just don't recall the last couple of times she's gotten chewed out for running this sort of a black ops thing. Who did it and why, but I'm sure it was at a presidential level, but I'm pretty sure it was also pre-New 52. But I think it'd be more interesting if they were to set this up where you had a couple of Black Op type guys that are wounded, can't go into battle, but they know what needs to be done.
Mm-hmm.
And you had them kind of riding remotely, you know, via the cliche headset communication camera type link up that we see in every movie and TV show and comic these days.
Yeah.
And are basically having to do whatever they can to get their assigned, you know, supervillain grunt to do what needs to be done. Now, some of them, like Deadshot, may be very easy to work with. Others might not be. And you could get to where you had a recurring group back at home base of characters that you become familiar with and how they interact with the villains, etc., and actually rotate through the villains on a much more frequent basis, yet still have that recurring cast aspect.
That sounds like a pretty good series.
I think you could do a lot more fun stuff that way and really expand on the premise without radically changing the premise. And it would get around the why do the villains keep doing heroic things if they're basically forced into it, more so than they are now.
Yeah.
And it would be really ironic to have a villain who's basically getting forced to do stuff even they think is wrong based on the guy, kind of their operator, their handler, whatever.
I would like it if in any of the other Harley iterations, she occasionally, references the bomb that's implanted in the back of her head.
Or being in jail in Louisiana, where she's not.
It would be nice if she, you know, just threw a bone out there every once in a while to connect the tissue a little bit. I'm kind of disappointed in Rob Williams because I really enjoy what he's doing with Unfollow at Vertigo, and I really enjoyed his previous series there, Royals, Masters of War. I thought that was really great. So those were some really cool, well-written books.
Mm-hmm.
And Unfollow still is. And, you know, I don't know how many other superhero comics he's written, but this is not super engrossing and compelling stuff here. So it's really disappointing when a creator you like misfires.
Do you think it was just not good, or did you think it was actually bad?
I don't think it was bad. I think it was I liked Flag's character. I just thought it wasn't strong enough as a intro issue, whatever we're calling rebirth issues, what their purpose are, or whatever. It didn't do a very good job of hooking a reader who's picking it up off the shelf, or me, who is a lapsed Suicide Squad reader. Didn't do a good enough job to say, oh, that old Suicide Squad, don't worry about that. This is the new Suicide Squad. Well, not really. This is the Suicide Squad, and here's why you should be reading it. There's nothing here that says this is why you should be reading it. In fact, this could just be the next issue, really, and it's nothing special.
Yeah, I agree with that. For me, it's not that they did anything wrong or anything bad. It's just this. If I had gotten out of Suicide Squad and was coming back and checking this out, I would be feeling, yeah, it's the same thing I left.
Yeah.
But I haven't left it, so I know it's the exact same thing. For me, this gets kind of that perfect C rating. It really just didn't move the needle. And it, like I said, didn't do anything wrong. It wasn't bad. But if I didn't come into it thinking, yeah, you know, I'm familiar with the concept, I know what's going on, and I like it well enough to be reading it. If I had to be very draconian in my pull list, this would not have made the cut. But I don't, so I'm going to keep getting it. But it's certainly not something I can recommend to somebody.
Yeah, I'm at a C+ based on just my enjoyment of the Flag character. And it's really all I had to hang my hat on, and the only thing that pushed it above average. I think the anchors did Philip Tan a disservice. I'm blaming them. There's a team of three of them that did the inks on his pencils, and I'm going to blame them for muddying a lot of these panels and getting real scratchy on a lot of the faces and things. I'm thinking I've enjoyed Philip Tan stuff before, so I don't think this is classic Tan.
I would certainly like to see the penciled pre-inked pages. Because, like, when we first see Flag in the prison, the no eyes, because they're hidden in shadow, I'm curious if that was Tan's artistic decision or the inkers.
And there being a boomerang in DC and Marvel is just ridiculous.
Well, technically, this was Captain Boomerang, but he and Deadshot are long, long time members of the Suicide Squad. So having them in there, I mean, it just makes sense.
I don't want more than one Boomerang guy. You pick one. The other one's got to go.
I'm actually not sure which one predates the other. I'm thinking, perhaps wildly incorrectly so, that the Captain Boomerang character might have been first.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, most of DC stuff's older.
But if nothing else, he's a cool member of the Rogues. He's a, again, card-carrying long-term member of the Suicide Squad. He's certainly, I think, gotten more screen time or, you know, on panel time than his Marvel counterpart.
Not in the movie, though, is he?
I was thinking he was.
Yeah, I haven't seen it yet.
As a matter of fact, I'm almost certain he is, but I haven't seen it. It's on the list to see if I can make it to the theater before it gets bounced out of it, or I'll catch it on Blu-ray. Yeah, like I said, for me, it was a perfect C, and I think the big difference between our ratings is I was familiar with Rick Flagg. You were not. You had something to hang your hat on, which, for me, that was what this was lacking.
Mm-hmm.
Anything for me to say, that's why somebody should go read it. We'll see if they do better with the actual first issue or not. I'm guessing not, but like I said, we'll find out.
Yeah.
So, our Marvel book is Civil War II, Kingpin number 2. This is one where I really enjoyed the first issue of this. Obviously, it ties into the Civil War crossover. Now, you're sitting that one out, right?
Yeah, and I wouldn't have read this had you not praised the first issue.
I'm sensing I should apologize.
Oh, no. Okay. I actually really like this.
Well, you know, it's funny because I enjoyed this. I'm going to have some harsh words to say on a few aspects, but as I got off work today, I work on one side of town and live on the other, so I got a little bit of a commute. What I typically do on the nights we record, I get in my car and I think, okay, I gotta make sure I got something to say about these things. So which books did I read and what do I need to talk about? Just as a memory jog. And I could name our other book that we're going to get to next very easily. I could name our DC book very easily. It took me literally 5 or 10 minutes to remember this. Now, granted, I read a few other things afterwards last night, and I think I stand by this is a good book, but it's also kind of a little forgettable at times.
Heavy dialogue.
I think it's got a good concept about a guy who can kind of operate under the radar of the heroes, which, given kind of the whole Ulysses and predictive justice and all that stuff that's going on, pretty impressive. But I think this is something that needed a better creative team, because there's a lot of like you said, heavy dialogue and stuff. So I think the writing in a few places could have been tighter. Certainly, there was nothing that really I felt was highly memorable. It was good, but not, oh yeah, I love that part or something like that. And frankly, the art on this issue was just, it was shaky. It was
real clear shaky, enough. Yeah, it was shaky.
I mean, I could tell what was going on, but there were one or two places where it's like, it's just not so good. And to me, the clincher on that was the what should have been the very dramatic final page. I got to that, and it's like, wait, hang on, what's going on? Oh, I get it. You know, it was something that should have really knocked my socks off, even though it wasn't particularly surprising. It was just not well executed.
Yeah, I'm not 100% exactly sure what happened there. So I'm with you. And I thought the art or the communication between writer and artist, there's something off there. I will disagree. I think the writing was very strong, and where one of my favorite writers, recent writers, kind of, I thought, blew it a little bit with Suicide Squad, Matthew Rosenberg, who is lighting it up with four kids walk into a bank over at Black Mask, or yeah, Black
Mask. I think that's Black Mask, yeah.
And I'm really loving his style there, and it continues here. I really like his writing style. It is very verbose. There's a lot of it's very word heavy, but I like his writing style. I like his use of words and the way he tells the story. I really enjoy his style. It's really great. But I could definitely see why you would say, you know, it does go on for a while, and we don't move really that far along in the plot. And so I can definitely see how you could say that it was whatever you said that you didn't like.
but, I think the writing could have been better. Go to the yeah. third to last page. So not that to be continued page, not the one before, but the one before that. Does this take place on a single day, or do multiple days elapse here?
Oh, I thought it was, multiple days, yeah.
Really? I mean, are you certain? I mean, I'm not disagreeing.
I'm not certain, but that's what I think.
That's what I thought, too. But looking at it here, there's also just one panel that could have just been a continuity error, and the rest could have all been literally one right after another in an afternoon.
Because it seemed like it was a series of meetings over time with Kingpin and Janice that were occurring. And this was just them running the Empire kind of together. And
it felt montage-like, but there's no clear, definitive way to say yes, it is, or no, it isn't.
Yeah.
That's the kind of little thing on the writing that I think could have been done a little bit better. And again, I agree with you. I think this took place over the course of many days. But those were the sorts of things where I suspect, not having seen the script, that it was pretty clear in the script. But this is one where the artist, which is Ricardo Lopez Ortiz, I'm not sure what else he's done off the top of my head. He's able to communicate the story, but I think there are things that could have been clearer visually. I thought this was a good Kingpin story. He's definitely the lead here. And I like how this takes place kind of around the edges of the main Civil War II events,
mm-hmm.
but clearly hinges on the Civil War II events, while trying to keep these characters pretty far from that, which, given these characters are all bad guys and the Civil War II stuff is focusing on the heroes and these guys want to stay out of jail and stuff, and given the whole predictive justice, that's kind of hard. It makes for a good, premise of the story and a good twist on it. Again, I enjoyed the story a lot. I just felt like while this was good, there is a better execution to be had of this, but not in a way where I think it was mandated that they had to have a better execution. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You put a top flight creative team on this, and it could have really knocked some people's socks off. As it is, I think it's going to kind of fly below the radar and be a little bit of a hidden gem for people. But to me, where this got a little weak was the final page and the art on the panel immediately preceding that. It spun the story in a direction that the execution of it, I know what they were going for, and that's not what I had initially seen with the art.
Mm-hmm.
And really, I can forgive a lot of stuff. I just thought the artist really had a chance to shine on the final page, and it fell flat.
Yeah, we'll have to delve into that offline, I think.
Yeah.
Because I got a couple questions myself, and I don't want to ruin that reveal for folks. But I thought...
And hopefully it works better for other people. Maybe I'm alone in this.
I mean, I agree with you. The final page left a little to be desired. But I think some of the stuff that really worked, and I thought there was a lot of really strong stuff throughout this. The agent, the double agent, and his introduction and being uncovered, I thought that was really great, captivating stuff. I love that. I really like the interplay between Kingpin and Janice, and then Janice and then Kingpin's kind of assertion over some of these underlings and other crooks. And, we've seen him do this before. now you work for me, but it still unfolded really, really coolly. And it was just well done. And Kingpin really was a step ahead of everyone and really kind of showed why he's the Kingpin. And so that stuff all worked really well for me, and I really enjoyed that part. So,
I agree with that. I think this is a really good Kingpin story, and there are a lot of other really good Kingpin stories to compare this to, and it comes out favorably. It's just, I think they could have established Janice a little bit better, and like when we get the agent, the undercover guy, that was one where I think if the art had been a little clearer and I could have recognized the face from the first page or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That might have worked a little better for me.
Yeah.
But it was clear what was going on, so, I liked it. It's just, this is the kind of comic that frustrates me when they've got, I think, a good premise, a good execution, but they could have had a great execution. And I felt that they were a little shy of that.
Yeah.
And I was really hoping that they could have knocked it out of the park a bit further.
There was tons of enjoyment here for me, so I'm at a B+. But I totally agree. I think the ending was mishandled a little bit from either the art or the communication between the writer an artist. Something fell off a little bit there because it's not as clear as it could be and it's not as compelling as it could be.
This is one of those cases where I would love to see the script, the pencils, the inks, the various stages to know, you know, who to properly credit or not for various things. And this is one where, for me, I'm going with a B-. I think it's got a lot of potential that is realized. There was an aspect where the art stylistically didn't work for me. It's a little scribbly, scratchy, whatever you want to call it that way. It, by and large, tells the story very well, but there were two, maybe three places where I felt it didn't. And one or two of those in particular really hampered my enjoyment of the story a bit.
Mm-hmm.
But I think maybe if I gravitated more to that kind of art style, maybe that wouldn't have been a big deal. Even with all of that having been said, I definitely think this is worth checking out for fans of the Kingpin and somebody who wants to see just a little bit different sort of a thing over at Marvel. It is a Civil War II tie-in, most certainly, but not in a way where you've got to know anything about Civil War II other than the basic premise. And they give you that in the previously on page.
Right, because I don't read any of that, so and I was able to enjoy it.
You enjoyed it more than I did, I think, so yeah. Mm,
yeah, yeah.
So our other book of the week is from Titan Comics. It is Mycroft Holmes and the Apocalypse Handbook. It is by Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Yes, that Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is, if there are multiple. Who knows? Maybe there are.
There are, actually.
There are, really? Wow.
Yeah, there's a football player that's Kareem Abdul-Jabbar as well.
It's not that one. It's the basketball player. He's crazy mm-hmm. tall. And he's got a co-writer, Raymond Obstfeld, whom I don't know if he's done any comics or not before. I'm a fan of Sherlock Holmes. I mean, I don't consider myself any kind of hardcore fan or scholar or anything remotely of the sort for Sherlock Holmes. I've read, I think, well, I know all but one of the Arthur Conan Doyle stories. I've seen a couple of movies here and there. I watched a bit of Elementary. I'm behind on that. I've watched the BBC show. So I'm familiar with the character. I'm familiar with Mycroft, the smarter, mm-hmm. older brother of Sherlock Holmes.
Yep.
When I heard about this comic, particularly the Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, I was curious. I wanted to see what they do. I mean, Mycroft can be a fascinating character. I had no idea Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was a fan of the character or the whole Sherlock Holmes stuff, nor did I realize he's a novelist. So he's got – this takes place in an existing universe that Kareem Abdul-Jabbar has worked in and created with, I think, a co-writer. There were a few things. This is a suggested for mature readers comic. They open on a piece of art with bare breasts, so there's nudity, and there's some more later. There was one, maybe two panels that got a little, you know, kind of, well, that's a little disgusting. And there was a little profanity here and there. But what I appreciated about the story is the bit of kind of graphic violence or gore or whatever was really just a panel or so, and it clearly set up the stakes for the stories in terms of this is what's going to happen if the hero doesn't save the day. So we really hope he does. The profanity with the nicknames for the Holmes brothers clearly established immediately the fact these guys just hate each other. They do not get along.
Yeah.
So I felt those things were used sparingly. They were used very strategically. And while I think the story could have been told without those things, they didn't feel the least bit gratuitous. And again, they were artfully used in a very specific and choreographed manner. So didn't offend me at all. It didn't bother me. It's something I definitely took notice of, but also because of how effectively it set up aspects of the story fairly quickly. So there was an efficiency of the storytelling here. And what I found fascinating about this was, again, I haven't read Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's novel. I hadn't heard really of Raymond Obstfeld, or at least I don't recognize the name. The artist, Joshua Cassara, don't recognize his name either. This is a 25-page comic with a lot of story in it. I felt the writing was fairly tight. I thought it was fairly effective. We get, I think, a really good grasp on this version of Mycroft. We get less of Sherlock. I mean, the character of Sherlock really leverages kind of the cultural knowledge of the character, who he is, what he is, and whatnot. And it's a young version, and he's not the star of the show. He's just a guest star at best. So I wasn't bothered by that. And he was fairly entertainingly used. This is something that I was concerned we would get a lot of kind of first-time rookie comic book writer mistakes in this issue, as I think we've gotten in a few other things elsewhere, even if they're not literally first-time writers. The fact that I thought this was a very polished and entertaining story pleasantly surprised me. The one part that kind of reserves my enthusiasm for this is the issue ends with Mycroft only really starting to get wind of the adventure he's about to have. This is a 5-issue miniseries. We're 20% of the way through the story. It would really have been nice if Mycroft could have started taking some proactive action on this adventure, but in these 25 pages, they set up the threat. Clearly, I think, even if Mycroft isn't aware of it, we are. So it's not like it was all set up on his character. We get a bit of the bigger picture, even if not as much as I might have hoped.
Yeah. I thought the first 7-8 pages of setup and premise were really slow. And I was a bit down on this book at that point. It just drug on for a while, and there was no Mycroft, and I was waiting for something interesting to happen and wasn't really following exactly what they were laying down anyway. But then we got into Mycroft at Cambridge.
Which I think is on page 6. So, okay, the first 5, I can see where you're coming from. Okay.
Yeah. And so, yeah, it drug a little bit there at the beginning for me during the premise setup and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But once we start interacting with Mycroft, and, you know, my most recent interaction with Mycroft is on Elementary, and he's not like, it's a totally different character,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah.
He doesn't, but because Mycroft is very similar in this book, he's very similar to Sherlock in his deduction skills, very smart, but then you couple that with him being a bit of a sarcastic, very sarcastic and cocky guy that's also pretty good with the ladies. So he takes some of the other things that Sherlock is lacking, at least in this iteration, and kind of amps it up to kind of a he's really a Renaissance man here, and portrayed as such.
What's fun with the character of Mycroft is he's used so sparingly in the Arthur Conan Doyle stuff. It gives other writers a lot of leeway as to how they handle him.
Mm-hmm.
And in this particular take, he's got the same skill sets and intelligence, deductive reasoning, like you said, as his brother Sherlock, but a completely different personality. And whereas Sherlock is typically a bit more of an introvert, a bit just not wanting to bother with people, Mycroft is almost the polar opposite. He loves toying mm-hmm. with people in this version. And I found him a very entertaining character to watch.
Yeah. And Mycroft doesn't have the same charitable nature either. He wouldn't go out of his way to, you know, rescue a dog or a famous painting from a burning building, for example. And he's not the type of person that will fight crime or solve a caper just because it will do good in the world. He's very self-centered, at least in this first issue. But he's still likable because he's very funny and he's very entertaining, and he's the star of our story here. And that really worked for me. Once this thing gets going, it really gets going. You're pulled in, and it's a great little intro and a great little caper. And he solves the mystery pretty quickly and very agile with the way he does it. There's a great interaction in there with Sherlock where they have the brotherly banter and it's kind of establish their roles really quickly. And then Sherlock kind of just turns his back on what could be a life, you know, his brother could be in life threatening danger. And he just laughs it off and says, well, I'm sure he'll let me know what happens when he gets mm-hmm. out of that. And that was just, At first, I just thought, boy, that's really, really harsh. Would he do that? But then I think the relationship they have, he would, and he probably had already deduced that it was just a setup on somebody's part, and there was no actual real danger there at all.
I get the sense that these two versions of Mycroft and Sherlock, you could have a scene where this, like, an ongoing, where you start in a pub or whatever, one of the brothers is there, the other walks in, sits down, you've got a couple of wordless panels, one of them gets up and walks out, and then you've got another scene or two where one is explaining to, you know, either Watson or whomever, everything that happened in that wordless scene, because they don't need to speak, they know what each other is thinking.
Yeah.
You know, they know each other so well and can pick up on all the minutia and the nuances. And the fact that they established these characters quickly, efficiently, and entertainingly. Again, there's a certain amount of leverage if we all know who Sherlock Holmes is, and we get a sense by kind of guilt by association of what his brother might be like, and then they clarify the differences.
Yeah. Now, we, I believe, reviewed another Sherlock book not that long ago, didn't we?
You know, that's a great question. We did.
I know we did Watson and Holmes a long time ago, maybe year one of my tenure here. But I thought we may have done another Sherlock Holmes more recently than that.
I think it was, I'm checking my notes. We've done so many things. It is a little hard to keep track. The 7% Solution from IDW. We did that about a year ago.
Okay.
Well, like that was the classic, you know, sort of take.
I like this much better than that. This to me is a much stronger book, much more engaging, great read for whether you know Sherlock or don't. You get all you need to know, except what the Apocalypse Handbook is, because I have no clue what that is. It was not introduced, or I missed it. Maybe that's what that thing at the first five pages was about.
That non-book looking thing at the beginning.
The non-book, the round sphere-shaped book, Apocalypse Handbook from the beginning. So that was kind of a disconnect for me. But I mean, if you discount that, I really, really enjoyed this character and this the way it was written, and art was fine, and it just really told a great story, and a fun pre-mystery was solved. It was really cool, and I really liked the way it was executed.
Yeah, I agree with all of that. Again, my only, and reservation's not the right word, the only thing that again kind of quells my enthusiasm a little bit on this is, like you said, we don't know what the Apocalypse Handbook is. Mycroft really hasn't gotten into the thick of things with the adventure yet. He's essentially just been recruited. But it's been a really fun issue doing all of that with enough payoff inside the issue that I'm okay with that. But if they'd actually gotten to the point where he's engaged in the adventure and we know what the Apocalypse Handbook is, those sorts of things, that would have raised my estimation on the issue a bit. As it was, I'm going with an A minus. I think this is a lot of fun. It's very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
If you are even a casual Sherlock Holmes fan, I recommend checking this out. I thought they did a good job, very solid job on the writing, the art, the whole thing. Again, I was a little concerned with a bunch of creator names. I just didn't recognize how much have they done and would we get a cool idea, but with some rookie execution mistakes. And there was none of that to be had.
Yeah. Yeah. I echo your A minus. I would have taken those first five pages, compressed them to three, and then thrown two on the back end with a little more into the where we're going to be heading next. And I think that would have been an A or an A plus for me at that point. And it's just, but it was still really good, still worth reading. The best Sherlock comic I've read in a lot of years. So I really, really enjoyed it. And I recommend checking it out to everyone.
I think you're right. I think if they had tightened up the beginning, both the first five pages, and then maybe squeezed another page or two out of the other setup we got on Mycroft, and we had about another four or five page scene after this where he gets here's the mission, and he does kind of the typical Holmesian, well, here's the solution, and then end on a little bit of a zinger, you idiot, we know that. This is the problem we want you to solve, kind of a little bit of a comeuppance to him, maybe. They could have definitely, I think, boosted this potentially very much into that A-plus category.
Yeah.
I'm curious to check out the novel that is you know, this is not based on, but in the same universe as with the other Mycroft adventure, I guess.
Yeah, I'm more curious now than I was before. I knew he had written some novels. I wasn't familiar with what their subject matter was. And now that having read this, I'm much more interested than I was before.
Mm-hmm. This is something I could see a live action adaptation based on either this, the novel, whatever, being a lot of fun to watch. So we'll see if they do that.
Yeah.
So I have been busy editing podcasts and stuff like that. So I've not gotten as much reading as I would have liked to done, but I have gotten some reading done. Last week when we talked, I think I had, 126 or so comics left to read.
Mm-hmm.
I am down to 116.
Okay.
But this includes the 39 or 40 or whatever comics that came in this shipment. I've actually finished off the week of July 6th. That is now done and behind me. And I've been, I'm about 42% or so done with all the weeks remaining, the 13th, the 20th, the 27th, and this week. I've been kind of bouncing around a little bit, trying to stay current on Civil War and as much of the DC Rebirth stuff as I can. I've probably got another, 10 or 12 issues to be current on DC. And then after that, I may bounce around a little to either, you know, knock out Valiant and try to, at this point, I want to go week by week. But it's just I'd get further and further behind or whatever, and it's hard to keep doing the reviews if I'm not current on certain things. So at this point, going kind of narrative universe by narrative universe, bouncing between doing that and then finishing off weeks and trying not to get further than 4 weeks behind.
Yeah,
is kind of my goal.
Yeah, I did not take a 2 week trip out west, but I am also 3 weeks behind. I only read. 3 books this week, and I have half a dozen from the 20th of July still, and a sizable amount still from the 27th. So I don't have the same excuse you do, except I've just been doing other things. So I'm still making my way to try to get caught up, and hopefully we will intersect and we will both be current at the same time.
I hope so. There's some good stuff coming out. I'm enjoying what's going on Aquaman quite a bit. Justice League, still a little bit of a slow burn. Still a little bit of mixed feelings on the direction they're going on Nightwing. The execution is good. What else have I been reading from this week? So far, my overall thoughts on Civil War 2 is that I'm enjoying it. I think it's a good concept. But it's one of those sprawling epics. And it's like, just kind of move it along a little faster. Or a little, not faster, but narrower. No, don't spin it out into everything and its dog. Mm-hmm. But what I'm getting, I'm liking. And with DC Rebirth, by and large, it's good, but it's not the knocking it out of the park I was hoping for after DC Universe Rebirth number one, which just worked on a lot of levels for me. Hitting some of the nostalgia buttons, some really great stories, some great art. A couple of books are doing that, but it's not kind of the line-wide flip a switch and, oh my god, it's wonderful that I knew I wasn't going to get, but I was hoping for it nonetheless.
I feel the same way. Like I mentioned earlier, I was just really expecting them to just take this DC Universe Rebirth concept and inject it into all these new titles, and so there'd be dribs and drabs of this great big mystery that would be unfolding, as well as telling these stories, these really good solid stories within it. I like Aquaman as well. I'm really enjoying Batman. There are some good books here that I'm enjoying, but the promise and what I was hoping to get based on my read of DC Universe Rebirth, they haven't meshed. They haven't lined up, and I feel like we're really close to about where New 52 was already. And I find that a little disappointing.
Going back to Suicide Squad for a moment, imagine how cool it could have been if we'd gotten this rebirth and we had realized that many of the villains that just we haven't seen lately or maybe at all in the New 52 are essentially stockpiled up as cannon fodder for a new version of the Suicide Squad. Something where it's like, oh, wow, I haven't seen him in ages. Or maybe they hide the identities And that's part of the mystery as these characters go out into the field of, well, who are they going to kill off this time? You know, or who are they going to bring back and let loose accidentally? You know, something where they could push the nostalgia buttons and change things up. Because again, what you're doing isn't bad. It's generally in a lot of places fairly good. But like you said, we're almost right back to where the New 52 was. It's not a departure.
Mm-hmm.
And if they thought people were kind of blasé about stuff before, how are they expecting this to really get us jazzed up and excited if literally this is just the Suicide Squad? It's no longer new, and that's a fairly accurate description of it.
I had committed to a minimum of the first three of all these titles to give them a fair shot, and I didn't even make it on a couple of them now that I've kind of sliced off. So I've already kind of reneged on that promise to no one that I made. Some of these are already falling off the pull list and dwindling, and you know, it's just it could have been so much more. And there's still another couple phases coming in the next couple of months, so we've got some new stuff coming out. I have higher hopes for Blue Beetle and some other things that are coming out in the future, so we'll see if any of those connect with me and with other readers.
Now, one of the others that came out this week, speaking of, you know, being a little selective in purchasing, was Flintstones number 2.
Oh.
That was one I have not pre-ordered, so I did not get. So if you or somebody else reads it and think I should continue with it, by all means, let me know sooner rather than later. Otherwise, that one may just fall off my list because I didn't pre-order it. You know, I've got plenty to be reading as it is, but if people think it's worth my time and is good, there's just so much to keep track of these days, and that one slipped below my radar. I just didn't take action on it between, you know, going to Comic-Con and all that stuff. I am going to be curious how both the Hanna-Barbera stuff and the Rebirth titles do in terms of sales, and how many people cut the cord quickly or give it a little longer leash, or if it just connects with them or gets burnt out quicker. I don't know.
I've come around on Scooby Apocalypse. I enjoy that a lot more than I did with that first issue. So it's connected with me a lot more now.
Interesting. Not so much for me. That's one that I may actually drop.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this episode goes up on the 15th, by which time the July numbers should be available. Alas, because I was at Comic-Con, there was some delays on my part recording the June numbers. So I believe if I've got my release schedule clear in my mind, which I may or may not, the June episodes of the Mayo Report are going to follow this episode on Wednesday and Friday, starting with the comics and going to the trades. By the time those go up and stuff, I will have crunched the numbers and we'll be coordinating with Sam and TJ to record the next batch. But the odds are the July numbers probably won't get up until the end of the month, and then I'll try to get back on the regular cadence by mm-hmm. that point. It's just a matter of, again, finding the time to do all of this, both the reading, the number crunching, the recording, the editing, et cetera. I wind up getting into a bit of a pre-work kind of get things done ahead of time before con, and then afterwards kind of a catch-up crunch because of time elapsing while I've been goofing off. And by goofing off, I mean seriously researching the totality of comic-dom by going to Comic-Con. So it's yeah. hard work. So.
Thank God you're out there doing that for us.
Somebody has to. Taking the hit for the team. Absolutely.
Now, I see that there's a new post for the next preview spotlight. So probably by the time you hear this, there'll be some online solicits. Mm-hmm. Please stake your flag in the dirt for what you want to be sending clips in. And pass that around, pass that opportunity around to other comic fans, other comic publishers and marketers, whatever. Open it up to people that love comics of all shapes and sizes. We want to hear a nice short clip. Tell them how easy it is. Tell them to just use their phone. They don't have to have Audition or on their computers, and they don't have to use GarageBand if they don't want to. They can just do it on their phones and send them in. But reach out to folks that maybe aren't familiar with it and share that and be a part of the world's first and only crowdsourced podcast.
Yeah, because I love finding out about new things this way and getting different perspectives on titles than that I can get just reading previews. So definitely spread the word, share the link for the episode, and if you've got friends either with the same taste as you or different tastes, encourage them to send stuff in. Because I don't generally read horror stuff, but there have been a couple of times it's like, well, that one I may give a shot to or whatever. It's just normally it would fall beneath my radar. And the more people we have working on this, the more comics, publishers, creators, genres, etc. we can cover. The deadline for submissions is going to be September 10th. Previews comes out on August 31st. So it's always not that first Saturday, but the second Saturday after Previews is released. But on that first Saturday after Previews is released is the Comic Book Page teleconference. That'll be Saturday, September 3rd at 5 Pacific, 7 Central, 8 Eastern. We had a little bit of a low turnout this past time, but still some good conversation and such. And that's just, hey, if you want to get on and talk about comics, comic-related movies, books, TV shows, you know, whatever. If you've got questions about the podcast, the numbers, or comics in general, this is a great time to kind of hop on Skype. We've got instructions on how to do that. Skype is completely free to use. And it's just kind of a great way for us to kind of get the community or, you know, a couple of members of it online and just chatting like we're hanging out at a comic shop. So if you can't make it right at 7 or whatever Central, don't worry about it. Chime in when you can on Skype and I'll add you into the call. So anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
That'll do it. Great stuff.
Cool. Join us next week as we discuss Superwoman number 1 from DC, All-New X-Men number 12 from Marvel, and Lone Ranger Green Hornet number 2 from Dynamite Entertainment.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.